If I may be so bold as to say so, we've been close in the past, Laura, and I'd consider it an honor and a privilege if you'd allow me to protect...
Sandine stopped short at the sight of Buxton lying on the divan with the bandage tied around his head. His eyes widened in surprise.
I appreciate that offer, Mr. Sandine, but I don't need you to protect me. My men and I can take care of ourselves. Mr. Buxton will be back on his feet soon, and in the meantime, I'm giving the orders on the Lazy F.
But you're just...
A woman? Was that what you were going to say, Mr. Sandine? Yes, I'm a woman. But I'm also Howard Flynn's niece, and blood runs true in the Flynn family. I won't do anything that I think would disappoint my Uncle Howard, and that includes letting you waltz in here with your smooth talk and take over without firing another shot.
I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about those masked men you sent over here last night to burn some of my buildings, kill some of my men, and terrorize me into going along with whatever you wanted.
That's crazy. I never...
You asked if I recognized any of the raiders. I got a good look at one of them, and I knew him right away. Your hired gunfighter, Frank Morgan.
Morgan? But no, you've got it all wrong, Laura. I didn't have anything to do with those men who attacked your ranch. I'm sorry it happened, and I'll repeat my offer to help you out in this time of trouble, but this is the last time. If you don't accept my offer, then whatever happens from here on out will be on your own head.
That sounds like a threat.
Oh, not at all. Consider it a warning.
How's this for a word of warning? In case you hadn't noticed, Mr. Sandine, you're in here alone, while your men are still outside. If anything was to happen to you, Mr. Glover and I could claim that you tried to attack me. And no one would ever be able to prove otherwise.
My men are right outside, if they heard a shot.
How long do you think they'd be your men if you weren't around anymore to pay them?
You're gonna be sorry about this, Laura.
The one thing I'm sorry about is that once upon a time I was taken in by your lies and thought that you were a gentleman. And my name is Miss Flynn to you.
All right. Have it your way. I'll be leaving now. Unless you care to try to stop me.
Believe me, Mr. Sandine, it would be just fine with me if you never set foot in my house or on my range again.
I don't know what happened to you. When you came out here, you were a gentlewoman from the East, as prim and proper as could be, and you knew your place.
The West happened to me, Sandine. It stiffened my backbone and put some sand in my craw, as they say out here. And my place is right here on the Lazy F.
Sandine just shook his head, glowered, and walked out. Laura went to the door, followed by Caleb Glover, and stood watching as he got on his horse and jerked the animal's bit savagely.
All right, boys, let's get the hell out of here.
No offense, Miss Laura, but what happened to you? I never heard talk like that from you before. It sure did sound mighty good.
To tell you the truth, Mr. Glover, I don't know where all that bravado came from. I just tried to imagine what Uncle Howard or Mr. Buxton would have done in a similar situation, and I pretended to be a tough Western woman.
Wasn't no pretending about it. Somehow, ma'am, over the past few days, you've turned into the genuine article. Life on the frontier's got a way of doing that. It either toughens you up or... makes you hightail it back where you came from.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. The Lazy F is my home now, and always will be.
Unless Sandine takes it away. He didn't take kindly to what you had to say. I reckon it's war now, for sure.
Sandine started it. He got clever by sending those masked raiders up here. He thought that if he could force me to turn to him for his so-called protection, it would look better if any outside authorities ever investigated the situation. Did you notice the look on his face when he saw that Mr. Buxton is still alive? He was surprised, very surprised. I think one of those masked gunmen must have told him that Mr. Buxton was shot in the head last night and Sandine assumed he was dead. That is proof he was behind the raid.
Don't reckon it'd stand up in a court of law. But I'd sure say you're right, ma'am. I noticed something else, too. Sandine looked really surprised when you mentioned Frank Morgan.
What do you mean?
I mean, he looked like he didn't have no idea Morgan was here last night. To tell you the truth, Miss Laura, I ain't so sure Buck was right about Morgan working for Sandine.
But Morgan was here last night. He was riding through the yard and shooting. I saw him with my own eyes. In fact, I took a shot at him just before Buxton's gun ran out of bullets.
I saw Morgan, too. In fact, I saw him shooting at them hombres with the masks on.
What are you saying? That Frank Morgan was fighting on our side instead of against us?
That's sure what it looked like to me. And I gotta ask myself, ma'am, if Morgan was battling against Sandine's men last night, what are the chances we judged him wrong on everything else?
You and the others found him standing over my uncle's body.
Yes'm, we did. But we didn't see him shoot the boss. I've thought long and hard about it, and I reckon everything could have happened the way Morgan said it did.
But that would mean I've misjudged him. We've all misjudged him, and made him a wanted man for something he didn't do.
Could be. We don't really know.
But if that's true, why is he still around here? Why doesn't he just leave? And why in the world would he risk his life trying to help us?
I ain't sure, ma'am. But maybe that's just the sort of hombre that Frank Morgan is.
The night before, Frank had followed the men who had raided the Lazy F until he was sure they were headed for Sandine's ranch. They were almost on the doorstep of Sandine's hacienda, in fact, before Frank veered Stormy off to the east and headed for the higher range. He wanted to find a place to spend the night that could be defended easily if he was discovered. Frank found such a place in a clump of boulders atop a hill. The big rocks would give him cover if he had to fight, and he had a good field of fire all around. Of course, if he got trapped up there, his enemies could just keep him pinned down and starve him out, but he hoped it would never come to that. He made a cold camp because kindling a fire would have been just asking for trouble. Rolling up in his blankets, he stretched out on the ground with his saddle for a pillow and relied on Stormy to serve as lookout. The Appaloosa would warn him if any danger came near. Frank didn't fall asleep immediately. As he stared up at the millions of stars in the sable sky, he thought about what had happened. He was pretty sure he had Sandine's ploy figured out. By making sure the raiders were masked, Sandine could claim that someone else had attacked the Lazy F. He might even be brazen enough to show up at the ranch and offer to help Laura in her time of trouble. After all, he would argue, she was a woman alone in a hostile land, beset by outlaws, who needed a man to look after her. The question was whether or not Laura would fall for such an approach. Frank honestly didn't know. He sensed that Laura Flynn had the makings of a frontierswoman, that pioneer blood flowed in her veins whether she knew it or not. But he didn't know how badly Jeff Buxton was hurt, or if the ranch foreman was even still alive. As long as Buxton was around, Sandine didn't have a chance of getting his hands on the Lazy F without a fight. But if Buxton was dead, if Laura felt like she was really alone, with no one to turn to, well, there was just never any way of knowing exactly what a woman was going to do. With age came wisdom, but no man ever got wise enough to figure out the answer to that question. When Frank woke up in the morning, his left arm and shoulder were stiff from the three-day-old wound, as they always were first thing like that. They didn't particularly hurt, though, and he was able to work the stiffness out fairly easily. Suddenly, the Appaloosa lifted his head and gazed off into the distance, ears pricking forward. Frank took notice of Stormy's reaction and immediately pulled the Winchester out of its saddle boot. He had reloaded the rifle the night before, so it carried its full complement of 15 rounds. Stormy had heard or smelled something unusual, and until Frank was sure what it was, he was going to be ready for trouble. Frank knew the approaching horse must have been what had caught Stormy's attention. Frank slid between a couple of the boulders and moved forward until he could see down the hill. There was a trail of sorts down there, a game trail more than likely, and plodding along it was a rangy dun carrying an empty saddle. Frank didn't recall ever seeing the horse before. He frowned as he watched the dun. The saddle proved that the horse had had a rider in the recent past. Frank hadn't heard any shots, and he didn't see any blood on the saddle. But the dun could have spooked for some reason and thrown his rider. The man could be lying somewhere nearby with a broken leg or a busted head, badly in need of help. If that was the case, he might even die if nobody came along to give him a hand. Frank grimaced as he thought about what he should do. The smart thing would be to just stay out of sight and let the dun wander on. Whoever the horse belonged to, the man's problems were none of Frank's business. It was difficult for him to turn his back on somebody in trouble, though. That tendency to try to help had nearly been his downfall many times, but he couldn't change the way the good Lord had made him. The dun was carrying a pair of saddlebags. By searching them, Frank might be able to find out who the horse belonged to at the very least. He scanned the countryside all around and didn't see any sign of movement except the obviously weary Dunn.
Oh, damn.
Frank turned around, went back to Stormy, slid the Winchester back in its sheath, and swung up into the saddle. Frank rode out of the clump of boulders and trotted down the hill toward the dim trail. The Dunn saw him coming and stopped. The horse stood there placidly and let Frank ride up and take hold of its reins. He leaned over and opened the flap on one of the saddlebags. There was nothing inside except a box of .44-40 cartridges, some jerky, a small frying pan, and a waterproof packet of matches. Frank checked the other side of the saddlebags and found just a few supplies, flour, salt, sugar, a slab of bacon. Whoever owned the Dunn traveled light, carrying only the bare necessities, including a canteen hung around the saddle horn by its strap. There was nothing to tell Frank who the horse belonged to. To find that out, he was going to have to backtrack the animal.
Come on.
Frank started along the trail in the direction the Dunn had come from, leading the riderless horse. He listened closely in case anybody was crying out for help, but he didn't hear anything unusual. A few hundred yards along, the trail passed close by an aspen. Frank didn't pay any attention to the tree until he had already ridden beyond it. The sudden rustle of its leaves warned him, though, and he kicked his feet free of the stirrups, let go of the Dunn's reins, and rolled out of the saddle. Frank heard a thump as booted feet hit the ground, and he knew that somebody had been lurking in the concealment of that tree and had dropped out of it after he rode past. Frank came up on one knee with the Colt in his hand, his finger taut on the trigger. He found himself facing a man he had never seen before. The man had a rifle in his hands, and the weapon was pointed right at Frank. Neither of them could fire without the other one having a chance to pull the trigger, too.
Well, looks like we got us a standoff here, don't it?
He was a lean man, about the same height as Frank, dressed in rough but clean range clothes and a battered Stetson. The hair under his hat was a sandy brown, as was the mustache that drooped over the corners of his mouth. Frank judged his age to be in the mid-30s.
That your Dunn horse?
Yeah. Thanks for bringing him back to me.
You're hoping I'd be curious enough to backtrack him and try to find out where his rider was. You're trying to draw me out.
Figured that'd be easier than trying to roust you out of them rocks up there on top of the hill. Man could get killed doing that. Anyway, I never heard of Frank Morgan passing up a challenge.
Know who I am, then?
Yeah, I've seen your picture on the covers of dime novels.
That was a pretty smart trick with the horse. You ride for Lazy F, or you want a Sandine's man?
Neither. Name's Horn. Tom Horn?
Frank knew the name, but with iron control, he didn't show any reaction. Tom Horn had been a civilian mule packer for General Crook during Crook's campaign against the Apaches, and he had also worked as a scout and translator for Chief of Scouts Al Sieber. Unless Frank was remembering it wrong, Horn had even been Chief of Scouts himself for a while, until Geronimo had surrendered, effectively bringing the Apache Wars to an end. Since then, Horn had developed a somewhat shady reputation, sometimes working on the side of the law, sometimes rumored to be nothing more than a common hired killer. Frank had never crossed trails with him before, but in the way of the frontier, he definitely knew who Horn was, just as Horn knew who he was.
You're not working for either of those two spreads. What do you want with me? There's no bounty on my head. Or is there? I've had rewards posted for me before when I didn't even know about it.
Nah, no bounty. And I ain't a bounty hunter anyway. Bucky O'Neill sent me into this here Muggian Rim country. I'm working for him as a special deputy.
Frank had also heard plenty about Bucky O'Neill, the former newspaper man turned sheriff of Yavapai County. A few years earlier, O'Neill had set off with a posse after a gang of outlaws that held up a train at Diablo Canyon Station. The other members of the posse had gradually given up, but O'Neill had pushed on doggedly, pursuing the outlaws in a dangerous trek that had eventually covered over 600 miles before he brought them all to justice.
O'Neill sent you after me.
Not exactly. Don't reckon he even knew you were hereabouts when he sent me in. He's been hearing rumors that there's a range war brewing in these parts, and since some of the range involved lies in Yavapai County, he decided to find out what's going on and nip it in the bud. I reckon you could say that I'm the nipper.
He's right about the war. There's been trouble, even bloodshed, between Howard Flynn's Lazy F spread and Ed Sandine's Saber Ranch. But Flynn's dead now, and I figure Sandine's on the verge of a cleanup. Lazy F is being run by a woman now, Flynn's niece.
Yeah, I heard about all that. Heard, too, that you've been in the middle of the big trouble ever since you rode into these parts, Morgan.
Not by choice. Trouble just seems to find me.
I know the feeling. I've been poking around for the past few days. Did some drinking in all the saloons in San Remo. Didn't really talk to anybody, but I did a lot of listening. Most folks seem to think that you're working for Sandine, and that you killed Howard Flynn.
Neither of those things is true. Sandine offered me a job at fighting wages, and I turned him down flat. And I'm convinced it was really one of Sandine's men who killed Flynn.
Yeah, I've heard that you had some trouble with a few of Sandine's men. Killed the Hanley brothers and Carl Lanigan, didn't you?
I did. None of them gave me any choice.
Them Hanleys wasn't such a much, but Lanigan was one tough hombre. So were you, from everything I've heard about you. But you never struck me as the sort who'd just work for anybody who met your price. I ain't surprised you turned down Sandine. Hell, Morgan, I'm getting a mite tired. What say we put down these guns and finish our talk without threatening to shoot each other?
Sounds good to me. Long as you go first, Horn.
You think I won't do it. I never heard tell of the Drifter gunning a man down in cold blood, though. So I reckon I'm gonna surprise you, Morgan.
Horn lowered the rifle, letting the barrel fall until it pointed to the ground in front of him. The tension left his body, too, and a grin creased his leathery face.
See? If you want to shoot me, there ain't a damn thing I can do about it.
So why don't you get your horse and put the rifle back in the saddle boot?
Sure.
Horn strolled toward the dun and slid the rifle into its sheath. He faced Frank again.
There you go.
Frank nodded and lowered his Colt. Horn wore a six-gun on his hip, too. But although the former scout was a deadly shot at any range with a rifle, Frank had never heard anything about him being fast on the draw with a handgun. He holstered his Colt, knowing he could beat Horn if the other man decided to slap leather.
That's better. No need for us to get feisty with each other. Happens I believe your story, Morgan. I don't think you killed Flynn.
Huh. You may be the only one in this part of the territory who feels that way. How come you don't think the worst of me, too?
I know a little about the sort of man who kills for pay. You ain't like that, Morgan. Now, what say we go back up in them rocks where I trailed you to, build us a fire, and cook up a little breakfast while we figure out what the hell we're gonna do about this range war?
As they rode back to the boulder-topped hill where Frank had camped the night before, Frank looked at Horn.
If we build a fire, smoke is liable to draw trouble to us.
Now, just what sort of trouble do you think that Frank Morgan and Tom Horn can't handle, eh? Fact of the matter is, you and me would make a good team, Morgan. I can drop a fella at 1,000 yards with this long gun of mine, and you can take care of all the close-up chores with a Colt. There are gents who'd pay handsomely to have the two of us working for them. What do you say?
I ride alone most of the time.
Yeah, well, I didn't really figure you'd take me up on it, but I figured the offer was worth making.
They reached the knoll and rode up the slope to the clump of boulders. Both men dismounted. Horn walked a short distance down the hill to gather some wood for the fire and came back with an armful of broken branches. Frank kept a close eye on Horn as he got to work building the fire. Frank still wasn't sure if he completely trusted the so-called special deputy. Horn was probably telling the truth, but Frank would be betting his life on that. Once the fire was going, Horn broke out his frying pan and sliced some bacon into it. The aroma that soon rose from the sizzling strips made Frank's mouth water.
I got some biscuits. They're getting a little stale by now, but they're not too bad.
Bring them out. Reckon they'll go right fine with this bacon. You got a coffee pot?
I do. And some Arbuckles, too.
We're gonna be eating like kings in a few minutes.
When the food was ready, they sat on opposite sides of the fire and ate. Maybe it wasn't fit for royalty, despite Horn's comment, but it wasn't bad. Horn asked Frank for his version of everything that had happened over the past several days, and Frank complied, leaving out none of the details and filling Horn in on his theory about Sandine's plans, too. Although Horn wasn't an educated man, Frank sensed that he had plenty of natural cunning, especially when it came to the shady side of life on the frontier.
Sounds to me like you're right about this fella Sandine. You think he used to ride the Hoot Owl Trail?
I'd take odds on it. That was Buxton's impression, and he seemed like a good judge of character. Well, up until the time he decided that I'd killed Howard Flynn, anyway.
Everybody makes a few mistakes. Don't mean they're wrong about everything. What were you planning on doing next?
I want to get my hands on one of Sandine's men. I think that under the right circumstances, one of them might confess that Sandine is behind all the trouble. If he made that confession to you, you could go back to Bucky O'Neill with the story and get plenty of law in here. Enough to round up Sandine and his gun throwers.
That might be a war in itself.
Yeah, but it would keep the Lazy F from being wiped out.
You have anybody in mind to grab?
I was thinking of Vern Riley.
I've heard of Riley. Don't think we've ever met. He's supposed to be pretty tough, though. Why'd you pick him?
Because he's Sandine Segundo. Probably knows more about his plans than anybody, except Sandine himself. And I think I can convince him to talk.
I might be able to help out a mite there. I've been around the Apaches quite a bit. Ain't nobody knows more about torture than those red devils.
Frank drank his coffee and didn't comment. He didn't plan to actually torture anybody. But if whichever of Sandine's men he captured wanted to believe that was going to happen, then so much the better.
We might ought to move pretty fast on this. If Sandine thinks that he's got the upper hand now because Flynn's dead, and that niece of his is on her own, he won't wait very long to strike.
That's what I thought. We'll clean up here and then head for Saber. Sooner we lay our hands on Riley, the better.
If everything I've heard about Vern Riley is true, we won't get him without a fight.
Frank nodded, his expression hard as rock.
Riley won't do us any good if he's dead, so we can't kill him. There's nothing that says we have to treat him gentle as a baby, either.
I like the way you think, Frank Morgan.
Caleb Glover flicked the reins against the backs of the horses pulling the Lazy F's ranch wagon. Behind him in the bed of the vehicle, as he was all too aware, lay the blanket-wrapped bodies of Hiram Smalley and Wilbur Catlett, the two hands who had been killed in the raid on the ranch the night before. Miss Laura had given Glover the grim task of taking the bodies into the settlement so that Jasper Culverhouse could see to the burying. Some big ranches had their own cemeteries, but Howard Flynn had always laid his riders to rest in the graveyard in San Remo when something happened to them. And of course, Flynn himself was buried there now, along with his wife and sons. Miss Laura was the last of the Flynns. As such, she had all of Glover's loyalty. He had ridden for the Lazy F for most of his adult life, and the boss had never been bothered in the least by the fact that Glover's skin was black. Howard Flynn hadn't believed in punishing a man for something that was beyond his control, but neither had he believed in giving that man any special rights and privileges because of it. All that had ever mattered to Flynn was whether or not a fella made a good hand. So Glover wasn't just about to desert Miss Laura. In fact, he would have rather been out at the spread now, keeping an eye on things. But she said she trusted him to see to it that Smalley and Catlett were buried fitting and proper, so he had gone along with what she wanted. She had split the crew, sending about half the men to town with Glover, while the other half stayed at the ranch in case of more trouble. She herself remained at the Lazy F, of course, to watch over the wounded Jeff Buxton. Worry gnawed at Glover's brain over that very issue. He thought that Miss Laura should have kept more of the men close to home to protect her. If Sandine attacked with all of his gunslingers, the dozen or so able-bodied men at the ranch might not be able to fight them off. She had wanted the Lazy F to be well represented at the funeral, though, so she had sent 10 men with Glover and the wagon. 4 rode on either side of the vehicle, and a couple behind it. The trail started down a hill between a pair of 15-foot-tall banks. At the bottom of the slope was a wide stretch of grassy flatland that reached all the way to the Verde River and San Remo just beyond. As the trail entered the cut, it narrowed so that the flanking riders had to drop back and join the ones behind the wagon. Glover had been over this route hundreds of times before, so he didn't think anything about it. Glover's instincts betrayed him then. He hauled back on the reins and brought the team to a stop, rather than pushing them into a gallop as he should have. He snatched his rifle from the floorboards at his feet and twisted on the seat, looking around to see what was happening. Pistols cracked, rifles blasted, and there was even the roar of a shotgun. It was instantly obvious to Glover that bushwhackers had been hidden up there, waiting for the group from the Lazy F to come along. The cowboys were trying to fight back, but the ambush was brutally effective. In the opening seconds of the fighting, 2 more Lazy F punchers were blasted out of their saddles by the storm of lead, one of them practically blown in half by a load of buckshot. Then Glover realized that his companions didn't have anywhere to flee as long as the wagon was blocking the trail. He acted as fast as he could, turning around again and dropping the rifle at his feet. But as he reached for the reins, a bullet slammed into his right shoulder and drove him forward off the seat. Glover was filled with a vast sea of agony that washed from one end of his being to the other. He gritted his teeth and sweat popped out on his face as he struggled to push himself upright and reach for the reins. He knew he still had to get the wagon moving before all of his friends were massacred. His strength deserted him, though, as he slumped down again, gasping in pain from his bullet-shattered shoulder. The reins he had dropped were right before his eyes, but he was too weak to reach out and grasp them. However, the continuing roar of gunfire, the screams of wounded men and horses, and the smell of blood and powder smoke in the air did what Glover had failed to do. The horses, hitched to the wagon, danced around skittishly for a moment, spooked by the violence all around them, and then suddenly bolted, stampeding down the trail with the wagon careening along behind them. Glover bounced around on the floor of the driver's box, and each jolt sent even more agony smashing through him. He felt his grip on consciousness slipping, but at least the wagon was moving again, he thought, and maybe some of the men could get out of that bottleneck and escape from the ambush. It was beyond his power now to do anything except hope that was so, and even that was fading. Once the horses stampeded, they had no place to go except straight down the sloping trail toward the flat. When they reached the end of the cut, instinct kept them on the trail. Glover roused a little when he realized the wagon was traveling over level ground. The trail was rough, though, and it still bounced wildly. He lifted his head and peered blearily over the footboard, over the backs of the lunging, straining, scared out of their heads horses. He saw a bend coming up and knew the team was moving too fast for the wagon to take the turn safely. If the horses left the trail and took off across the open country, that would probably be better, although such a course held its own dangers. But if they followed the accustomed path, the wagon might not be able to handle the speed it was moving at now. Glover reached for the dangling reins. His fingers touched them, tried to gather them in. Then the wagon jolted again, and the long strips of leather slipped over the footboard to drop out of Glover's reach.
Damn it!
The horses were truly running wild now, and there was nothing he could do to stop them or even slow them down. At least his wounded shoulder was numb now. In fact, his whole side had lost its feeling. Despite the morning sun, Glover was cold. He was dying. But he was too stubborn to give up without a fight. And as his pain-racked gaze happened to fall on the wagon's brake lever, he summoned up what little strength he had left and tried to lift his leg. If he could get his foot against the lever and knock it back, that might slow the runaway horses a little. He was too late. The fear-maddened horses swept around the sharp bend at a full gallop. They were able to make that turn, but the wagon swung far out to the side behind them. The wheels on the left side drifted off the trail and slid down the slight embankment at its edge. The wagon leaned precariously in that direction. For a second, Glover thought the vehicle was going to make it, was going to right itself and pull back onto the trail. Earth and sky changed places, and the wounded cowboy felt himself flying through the air. Then the whole world seemed to crash down on top of him with a crushing weight that drove all the awareness out of Glover's mind and body. Frank and Horn reined in as the sound of gunshots drifted to their ears.
Sounds like a big fracas. Think we ought to go have a look?
Frank was already turning Stormy's head.
I damn sure do.
The shots were a long way off. Well up the valley of the Verde River, in fact. Frank had intended to reconnoiter around the headquarters of Sandine's ranch and hope for a chance to grab Vern Riley. But in order to check out the sounds of battle, they would have to swing wide around Sandine's place and ride hard toward the Lazy F. Frank wondered if Sandine was already making his move against Laura Flynn. Would the man be brazen enough to simply ride in with his hired gunman and try to take over the Flynn ranch? Frank didn't know Sandine well enough to rule out the possibility entirely. Sandine might feel that he could do whatever he wanted to with impunity, now that Howard Flynn was dead, and Jeff Buxton might well be too. Frank had seen the overarching arrogance in the man's eyes. When an hombre like that kept getting away with things, sooner or later he came to believe that he was above the law, above even any restraints of common decency. That was when he was the most dangerous, because he thought he was untouchable. Because of his worry about Laura Flynn's safety, Frank was willing to postpone his attempt to capture one of Sandine's men. He and Horn could always come back to that later, after they had determined the cause of all the shooting. The gunfire continued long enough for Frank to pretty well determine that it wasn't coming from the vicinity of the Lazy F Ranch House. The directions were wrong for that. The battle was taking place somewhere between there and San Remo, though, and for all Frank knew, Laura could have started toward the settlement with some of her men and been jumped along the way by Sandine's killers. The tense lines of his face became even more taut when the shooting suddenly stopped.
Don't much like the sound of that.
Neither do I.
Frank pushed Stormy to an even faster pace, and soon both men were galloping over the wooded hills and across the lush pastures. The frontiersman's instincts that they possessed led them unerringly to the spot they sought. They struck a trail that Frank knew was the main route between the Lazy F and San Remo and turned toward the settlement. Moments later, they approached a long cut that slanted down between high banks to the flats along the river.
Damn.
Ain't seen anything quite this bad since the Apaches gave up.
The trail inside the cut was littered with bodies, mostly those of men, but a few horses were down too. Several other mounts wandered around aimlessly, their saddles splashed with blood. The scene told Frank plainly what had happened. Killers had been hidden up there on the banks, and as this group of men had ridden unknowingly into the ambush, they had been cut down brutally and mercilessly by the gunfire from above. What happened here had been cold-blooded murder, not really a fight at all.
Cover me, just in case any of the bastards are still skulking around.
Frank swung down from the saddle and let Stormy's reins drop to the ground as he started forward on foot. Behind him, Horn pulled his rifle from the saddle boot and let his keen eyes swivel back and forth from bank to bank, watching closely for any sign of a further ambush. Frank reached the first body, that of a young cowboy who lay on his back, staring sightlessly up at the blue sky. Judging by the bloodstains on his shirt, he had been shot through the chest 3 times. Frank was reasonably sure he remembered seeing the young puncher on the Lazy F. When the face of the next dead man looked familiar, too, he was more certain of it than ever. Then he came to a horse that had fallen so that the brand on its hindquarters was visible and the letter F lying on its side was unmistakable. For some reason, this group of Lazy F punchers had come riding along here only to meet their deaths in the Craven ambush.
Sandine.
The boss of Saber had sent his hired killers out to do their deadly work, and these bloody corpses scattered along the trail were the result. It was just possible that some of the men were still alive. Frank moved quickly from body to body, checking each one, knowing the chances that any of them had survived were mighty slim, but unwilling to give up hope until he was sure they were all dead. He saw more faces he recognized, and others he didn't, but he had never been around all of Howard Flynn's crew, so the unfamiliar ones didn't surprise him. Unfortunately, all of the men were dead. As Frank straightened from where he had been kneeling beside the last one, he counted quickly. 10 bodies. 10 men who would never again defend the brand they rode for. Laura Flynn was in deeper trouble than ever before, and she might not even know it yet. A frown creased Frank's forehead as he asked himself what these men had been doing out here. From the looks of it, they had been on their way to San Remo, but why? Frank thought back to the battle at the Lazy F the night before. If some of the punchers had been killed in that raid, Laura would have sent their bodies to town so that Jasper Culverhouse could see to the burials. But that would have required a wagon. Frank's eyes narrowed as he spotted the tracks of iron-rimmed wheels in the dust of the trail. The marks looked fresh. There had been a wagon with the group of riders, and that fact supported his theory.
But where is it now?
Frank turned his head and looked out across the flats at the bottom of the slope, and he bit back a curse as he spotted what looked like some sort of wreckage a few hundred yards away. Turning, he hurried back to where Stormy waited, along with Tom Horn.
All dead?
And it looks like the wagon that was with him crashed down yonder. Come on, we'll see if there's anybody alive up there.
Frank sent Stormy down the trail through the cut, letting the Appaloosa pick his own way through the welter of dead bodies. Horn followed. It took them only moments to reach the bend in the trail. The wrecked wagon lay upside down just beyond the turn. The team had broken free and stampeded on down the trail for a couple of hundred yards before stopping. Frank spotted them just standing there, still spooked but no longer in the grip of panic. A couple of long blanket-wrapped bundles lay on the ground near the overturned wagon. Frank recognized them for what they were and knew his theory was correct. The wagon had been carrying a couple of dead punchers from the Lazy F into San Remo so they could be buried. He wondered if one of the rough shrouds contained the corpse of Jeff Buxton. Frank wondered, too, where the driver of the wagon was. Maybe he had been shot off the seat and was one of those unlucky men lying back up there in the cut at the site of the ambush. That was the most likely explanation. The driver was down here, underneath the wrecked wagon. Frank was out of the saddle in a flash, running forward to see if he could help the injured man. Horn was right behind him. They reached the wagon and saw a man lying just beyond it, with his legs trapped underneath it. Frank recognized Caleb Glover. The black cowboy's face was now an ashen gray with agony. The right side of his shirt and jacket were soaked with blood, probably from a bullet wound. And the way he was lying told Frank that the wagon had landed on his legs when it flipped over, probably crushing both of them.
We gotta get him out from under there.
There's a rope on the saddle. We'll tie it to the wagon, see if we can use the horses to lift it enough to pull him free.
Yeah, I got a lariat too. We'll use them both.
Horn hurried back to the horses to see about that, while Frank knelt next to Glover. The cowboy was only semi-conscious.
Glover, can you hear me?
Between the loss of blood from the bullet wound and the injuries he must have suffered in the wreck of the wagon, it was amazing that Glover was even still alive. Horn ran back, trailing two ropes. One of the lariats was tied to Stormy's saddle, the other to Horn's horse. Horn handed one of the ropes to Frank and took the other himself. Without wasting any time, the men tied the ropes to the body of the wagon at the front and back of the vehicle, running them across the bed to the side where Glover lay.
You start the horses backing up. I'll be ready to pull Glover clear as soon as the weight's off him.
Horn nodded in understanding. He ran back to the horses, caught hold of their reins, and walked backward. The sideboards, on the other side from where Glover was pinned, dug into the ground and acted as a fulcrum as the ropes tautened. The side that lay on Glover began to lift. Frank grabbed him under the arm and pulled him back about 5 feet.
That's good!
Horn let the horses step forward again, and the wagon sank to the ground. Leaving the horses hooked up to it, the special deputy trotted around the overturned vehicle to join Frank in kneeling next to Glover.
You know this fella?
Yeah, his name's Caleb Glover. He rides for the Lazy F, one of the old punchers who was with Flynn for a long time. Looks like he was driving to San Remo with the bodies of the men who were killed in the raid last night. Laura Flynn must have sent the other men along with him, but then they rode into an ambush set up by Sandine.
How do you know it was Sandine's men who were up there on those banks?
I guess I can't prove it, but nobody else in these parts has any reason to want to wipe out a group of Lazy F cowboys. With that many men lost, Laura doesn't have enough now to fight off any real attack on her place.
Maybe somebody better go warn her about what's probably coming then.
Yeah, but we need to get Glover onto the settlement too. Maybe something can be done for him.
So we split up?
Don't have any choice. You take Glover to San Remo, and I'll head for the Lazy F.
Why not the other way around?
Nobody in town is gonna believe me after everything that's happened. But maybe they'll believe you, since you're working for Bucky O'Neill. Get help for Glover and then tell people what's going on. Maybe you could get some men together and ride back out to the Lazy F to help protect the place from Sandine.
A posse, you mean?
You're a special deputy, after all. I reckon that gives you the authority to deputize folks to help you.
Well, if it don't, we'll say it does. But you're facing the same problem either way, Morgan. The folks on the Lazy F aren't going to believe you any more than the townspeople would. And those wild cowboys are liable to start shooting at you as soon as they lay eyes on you.
I'll just have to run that risk. If I can get to Laura Flynn and talk to her, I think I can convince her that she's in a lot more danger from Sandine than she is from me.
Maybe, if you can stay alive that long.
Get my canteen.
Frank got an arm under Glover's shoulders and lifted the injured man a little while Horn fetched the canteen from Stormy's saddle. Frank took the canteen from Horn and dribbled a little water into Glover's mouth. Glover's eyes opened all the way. For a few seconds, his pain-racked gaze wouldn't lock on anything. But then his eyes focused on Frank's face.
Morgan.
That's right. Just take it easy, Glover. We're going to take you to town, get you some help.
How bad? I'm a hurt.
I don't know. You've been shot, and that wagon landed on your legs when it turned over. They're probably both broken. I can't tell whether or not you're busted up inside, but you're still alive, and that tells me you want to live. I know Miss Warren wants you to live, too, so you just think about her and hang on, you hear?
Thanks, Morgan. The boys with me. We was ambushed. Did any of them make it?
How many riders are with you?
Ten.
I'm sorry, Glover. They're all up there in that cut. Dead.
No! That bastard! Sandine! It was his men who done this!
You know this for a fact?
Yeah. I've seen that son of a bitch, Riley, and his damn shotgun. Just caught. A glimpse of him. But it was enough.
Horn looked across Glover's broken body at Frank and nodded.
It's enough, all right. There's the testimony you've been looking for, Morgan. I heard it with my own ears. And on my authority as a special deputy, I can arrest Sandine now.
Not with 40 gunslingers around him, you can't.
Well, I didn't say it'd be easy now, did I? Anyway, I'm counting on you to whittle down them odds a mite first.
I'll do my best. Let's get Glover to your horse so you can get on to San Remo.
Horn took the lariats loose from the wagon and coiled them, replacing them on the saddles. Then, as carefully as possible, he and Frank lifted the injured man to the back of Horn's dun and tied him into the saddle. Horn climbed on behind Glover.
I'll hang on to him. Won't be the first time I've got some blood on me.
Just follow this trail. It'll take you right to San Remo. When you get there, take Glover to Jasper Culverhouse. He owns a blacksmith shop and livery stable. He's the closest thing the town has to a doctor. Miss Warren at the cafe is Glover's friend, and I'm sure she'll want to help, too.
I'll take care of this fella as best I can, Morgan. Just you be careful, too. Better keep your head down when you ride up to the Lazy F, or they're liable to try to part your hair with lead.
Like you said about the blood, won't be the first time.
Laura didn't want to leave Jeff Buxton's side even for a moment, because she planned to be there when he woke. But A.C. Ducey finally persuaded her to go to her room and clean up a little. He promised he would watch Buxton like a hawk and call her right away if there was any sign that he was about to regain consciousness. She had to admit that she felt a little better after she had washed her face, brushed her hair, and gotten out of the blood-stained clothing she'd been wearing since the night before. She put on a clean dress and went back downstairs, hoping there might have been some change for the better in Buxton's condition while she was gone. But as she entered the parlor, A.C. Ducey looked up at her and just shook his head glumly. Buxton still lay there on the divan, out cold. The gentle rise and fall of his chest was the only sign that he was still alive.
I'll sit with him. You go on about your cooking. The men will be wanting some dinner pretty soon.
A.C. Ducey bowed his way out of the parlor and headed for the kitchen. Laura sat in the rocking chair next to the divan and watched Buxton. She had never been fully aware of the depth of her feelings for him until he had been hurt. Now she knew she loved him and wanted to spend the rest of her life with him. And it wasn't just because she needed him to help her run the Lazy F, either. Like all top hands, he had a great deal of loyalty to the brand for which he rode. He would have stayed on here as foreman and done his absolute best to run the ranch properly, whether or not there was ever anything personal between the two of them. She was sure of that, because that was just the sort of man Jeff Buxton was. But she knew now she would have loved him no matter what the circumstances were, simply because he was a good man, and something within her responded to him. She liked and admired him, and at the same time she longed to feel his hands on her body, his lips on hers. She knew she was being brazen to even have thoughts like that, but she couldn't help it. She loved him. If only he would wake up. Laura would be glad when Mr. Glover and the other men she had sent to San Remo with the bodies of the two dead punchers returned to the ranch. They ought to be back by nightfall, she told herself. She thought the Lazy F would be safe until then. It seemed unlikely to her that Ed Sandine would attack the place in broad daylight. But then she had to admit that she really didn't know what Sandine was capable of. When she first met him, she wouldn't have dreamed that he was actually the sort of man he was. But the more time that passed, the more she saw the truth. He was a ruthless man who would stop at nothing to get what he wanted. And what he wanted was the Lazy F, and, she feared, her. He hadn't gotten over her rejection of him and was still determined to have her one way or another. Sooner or later, he would come to take what he wanted. Laura could only hope that Glover and the others would be back by then and that she would have enough men to fight off Sandine and his killers. She was musing grimly about that when one of the hands came up onto the porch and knocked on the open front door.
Miss Laura?
What is it?
You better step out here for a minute.
Laura glanced at the unmoving Buxton, then went to the door and walked out onto the porch.
Listen.
That's gunfire, isn't it?
Yes'm. It's shooting, and a lot of it. Sounds like it's coming from somewhere between here and town.
Immediately, Laura thought of Glover and the riders she had sent along with the wagon.
Have our men had time to reach San Remo yet?
Hard to say, but probably not.
What does this mean?
Even as she asked the question, Laura was afraid she knew the answer, and the thought made her stomach clench sickly.
Well, it could be that those shots don't have anything to do with the fellas you sent to town. But it could be that somebody's jumped them, too. That many shots means a big ruckus.
An ambush, you mean?
Could be.
The man's refusal to give her a straight answer was maddening, but Laura understood it. He just didn't know what had happened. But under the circumstances, the chances were that the shots didn't mean anything good. Damn that Sandine. He would have known that she would send the bodies of the men who had been killed the night before into town. He could have sent his killers to set up a trap for her men. She never should have sent so many riders with the wagon. She realized now that she was facing a cunning enemy who might have just cut her forces almost in half. She had played right into his hands. If only Buxton had been in charge, he never would have made such a mistake. If only. But there was no point in such self-recrimination. The past couldn't be changed, and she had to deal with the situation the way it was, not the way she wished it could be.
You want me to send a rider to take a look?
Laura shook her head. Despite the fear she felt that something might have happened to Mr. Glover and the others, she couldn't afford to split the ranch's defenders anymore, not even by one man.
All the remaining hands are here at headquarters, aren't they?
Yes'm. Ain't nobody riding the range today. Sandine's men may be rounding up all our stock right this minute.
Laura knew the decision to abandon the cattle didn't sit well with the men, but there was nothing that could be done about it. The ranch headquarters had to be defended. They could try to recover any stolen stock later, when this whole range war was settled.
I want every man armed with a rifle and a pistol, and make sure they have plenty of ammunition in their pockets. Stay out of sight as much as possible. Everyone is to find some good cover that can be easily defended.
Yes, ma'am. You reckon Sandine's gonna hit us again?
I think it's only a matter of time.
If not for the smoke that curled thinly from the main house's chimney, Frank would have thought that the headquarters of the Lazy F was deserted when he rode up some time later. He didn't see anyone moving anywhere as he approached. When he came closer, he spotted quite a few horses in the corral. It looked like the remaining punchers were staying close to home today, rather than riding the range. That jibed with the observations Frank had made as he rode toward the ranch. He had seen Lazy F stock, but no one tending it. Laura Flynn had hunkered down to wait for trouble. That was a wise move, Frank thought, because she was bound to get it as soon as Sandine decided the time was right to make the final move in this deadly game. Frank rode openly along the trail that led to the ranch. Since it was obvious that he was only one man, he hoped the spread's defenders would hold their fire when they saw him, even if they recognized him. And if they didn't, well, he hoped their aim wasn't any too good. Stormy's hooves thudding against the hard-packed dirt of the trail was the only sound. Other than that, an eerie silence hung over the landscape. Frank was 500 yards from the house, then 4, and 3, and 200, and finally he was within easy hailing distance. No one called out to him, though. His instincts told him that he was being watched. He felt the hostile eyes on him. But still, no one tried to stop him as he rode right up to the porch of the main house. The front door was open, but inside of the house was too shadowy for him to be able to see much.
Don't move, Mr. Morgan. I can see you just fine where you are, and I'll shoot you if you try to get off that horse.
Take it easy, Miss Flynn. I'm not looking for trouble. I came to help you and to deliver some news.
Good news?
Not hardly, I'm afraid. Some of Sandine's men bushwhacked your wagon and your riders as they were on their way into town.
Frank sensed he wasn't telling her anything she hadn't already been afraid of. The sound of the massacre could have been heard easily here on the ranch.
Are any of my men alive?
Just Glover. And he's hurt pretty bad. A fella I know took him on into town to get help for him.
One of Sandine's men, you mean? Why would he do that?
Not hardly. The man I'm talking about is named Tom Horn. He's the special deputy sent into the Maggione Range by Sheriff Bucky O'Neill to get to the bottom of all the trouble in these parts. I've told you before, Miss Flynn, that I'm not working for Sandine. I know you saw me here last night and thought I was with those masked riders. I was actually trying to stop them.
That's what Mr. Glover said.
Laura Flynn moved into the doorway where he could see her. She was holding a Colt in her right hand. The barrel pointed at Frank and didn't waver.
He told me that you were shooting at Sandine's men last night.
That's right. I winged a few of them. I'll give you my word I didn't kill your uncle. And I've been trying to stop Sandine, not help him.
But I shot at you.
That wasn't the first time I've been shot at by somebody who made a mistake. I don't take any offense from it. I'd still like to give you a hand, if you're willing to accept my help.
Mr. Buxton was so sure.
Buxton made a mistake, too. I saw him get hit last night. Is he still alive?
Well, the bullet just creased his head, but he's still unconscious. We don't know if he's ever going to wake up again.
I've seen the same thing happen. For what it's worth, nearly everybody I've known who got hurt like that came to eventually.
Nearly everybody?
Well, a few never did.
How badly is Mr. Glover hurt? Will he pull through?
It'll be touch and go. He's shot through the shoulder, and that wagon turned over while he's trying to get away from Sandine's men and landed on his legs. Both of them were broken, that's for sure. Whether or not he had any other injuries, I just don't know.
My God. To think I could have prevented all this death and misery if I had just gone along with what Ed Sandine wanted.
Don't start thinking like that. There never would have been peace between Sandine and your uncle, no matter what you did. Sooner or later, Sandine would have tried to take over the Lazy F, and your uncle would have fought back. Trouble was bound to happen as soon as Sandine moved into this part of the country. His sort of man brings it with him, wherever he goes.
What sort of man is that?
Ruthless, ambitious, hungry for money and land, and above all, power. Call it whatever you want, but it comes down to the fact that Sandine and men like him think they can take whatever they want and nobody can stop them. It's up to the decent folks, the honest folks, to show those men that they're wrong.
Well, if nothing else, you've convinced me that you don't work for Sandine, Mr. Morgan. What do I do now?
You could invite me in. I don't like to sit back and wait for trouble to come to me, but in this case, I don't see that we have any choice. Sandine has us outnumbered, so we'd be foolish to take the fight to him. Tom Horn's gonna try to bring some help back from San Remo. Until then, we just hunker down and wait.
You're right. Of course. Come in, Mr. Morgan. Welcome to the Lazy F. I apologize for the inhospitable welcome at first.
Frank had already spotted rifle barrels protruding from windows in the house and several of the outbuildings.
As far as I'm concerned, any welcome is a hospitable one, as long as folks hold their fire.
Glover had lost consciousness again by the time Tom Horn reached San Remo with him, but the cowboy was still alive. Horn had his left arm around Glover's torso and could feel the wounded man breathing. He spotted the livery barn with the smaller building in front of it that had to be the blacksmith shop Frank Morgan had told him about, and headed straight for the place. A short, burly, mostly bald man stepped out, obviously having seen him coming. The fact that two men were riding double, and one of them was hanging on to the other, meant trouble most of the time, and the blacksmith acknowledged that fact by greeting Horn with a rifle in his hands. A big wolf-like dog followed the man out of the shop and watched the newcomers with a keen wariness.
Good Lord, that's Caleb Glover. What happened to him?
Got shot in an ambush and then had a wagon turn over him. You Jasper Culverhouse?
Yeah, that's right. Do I know you?
No, but Frank Morgan told me to find you.
Horn noticed how the big cur's ears pricked forward at the mention of Morgan's name and wondered if the dog belonged to the drifter.
My name's Tom Horn. I'm working as a special deputy for Sheriff O'Neill. Now, are we going to keep John, or are you going to help me with this fella?
Culverhouse set the rifle aside and reached up with brawny arms to take hold of Glover.
Easy now. I'll take him in and put him on my bunk.
Carefully, the two men carried Glover into Culverhouse's living quarters. The blacksmith's bed was little more than a rope bunk in a narrow room, but they lowered the injured man onto it.
Hey, would you mind going down to the cafe to fetch the lady who runs it? She keeps company with Glover, and she can lend me a hand taking care of him.
Yeah, Morgan said something about her. I reckon she's a colored lady?
Uh-huh, but we don't pay much attention to such things around here.
It don't make no never mind to me. I'll bring her right back.
Horn turned to go, but Culverhouse stopped him with a hand on his arm.
Hey, you say you're a special deputy?
That's right.
Bucky O'Neill sent me to get to the bottom of all the trouble in these parts. I ran into Morgan, got most of the story from him, and then him and me found this fella and some others who'd been ambushed by Sandine's men.
Sandine? You know for sure he was behind it?
Glover said he saw somebody named Riley, who works for Sandine. Sounds like enough proof for me until I hear something better.
And Morgan now? Morgan's not a part of it?
He ain't working for Sandine, if that's what you mean. He says he didn't kill Howard Flynn, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah, me too. Some folks may not want to believe it, but I do.
We'll hash it out later. For now, see what you can do for that fella, and I'll go get his lady friend.
Horn left the blacksmith shop, only to find that several people were already headed in that direction. Somebody must have noticed him and Culverhouse carrying Glover into the building, and the word had spread that there was a wounded man up here. A scruffy-looking gent in a suit and a bowler hat, with a graying beard and an eye that tended to wander, came up to him.
Mister, who might you be?
I could ask the same question of you.
I'm Willard Donahue, happen to be the mayor of San Remo. I'm told you just brought in an injured man.
Horn thought the man looked more like a tramp than the mayor, but he ignored that and jerked a thumb toward the blacksmith shop.
Yeah, I left him down there. Culverhouse is working on him. Fellow named a Glover rides for the Lazy F.
Caleb Glover? My God. Somebody needs to tell Mary Elizabeth.
Lady who runs the cafe? I'm on my way there now.
I'm much obliged. I say you never did tell me your name.
Tom Horn.
The look on Donahue's face told Horn that he had heard of him, but Horn didn't hang around to explain what he was doing here. He strode toward the cafe, his long legs covering the ground quickly. It was mid-afternoon by now, a slack time for any eatery. The cafe was empty when Horn walked in.
Be right with you.
Miss Warren.
Mary stuck her head out the door.
I said I'd be...
Mary stopped when she saw the look on Horn's face. The fact that he was a stranger probably alarmed her a little, too.
What is it? What's wrong?
I just brought in a fella named Glover. He's down at the blacksmith shop, hurt pretty bad.
The woman's hand went to her mouth as her eyes widened in horror and fear.
Oh, Caleb!
Mary rushed out of the kitchen, still wearing her apron and with flour dusting her hands, and left the cafe on the run. Horn followed at a more leisurely pace. Before he reached the blacksmith shop, he noticed a buggy rolling into San Remo from the other end of town, along the trail that meandered to the northwest and eventually reached Prescott. He might not have paid as much attention to the vehicle if not for the fact that there were two women in it, and the one handling the reins was pretty and had long red hair. She brought the buggy to a stop in front of one of the mercantiles. The women weren't any of his business, Horn told himself. He resumed walking toward the blacksmith shop. Horn stepped into Culverhouse's room. He saw the blacksmith and the colored lady bent over the bunk, working on the injured man.
How bad is he?
Horn had heard Glover's statement that the bushwhackers were led by the gunman named Riley, who evidently worked for Ed Sandine. That was enough legal proof for Horn to act upon, but it would be better in the long run if Glover was around to testify against Sandine if matters ever came to court. Which they probably wouldn't, Horn mused, since dust-ups like this usually resolve themselves in powder smoke and blood. But just in case...
Bad enough. The bullet busted his shoulder and he lost a lot of blood, but at least it went on through so he's not carrying a chunk of lead in him. Both legs are broken. He'll never ride again. He'll be damn lucky to walk.
But he will live.
Well, the fact that he's still alive is a damn miracle, so yeah, I'd say he's got a chance. If losing that much blood didn't kill him, us cleaning him up and trying to set those legs in splints probably won't. But we'll know more in a day or two.
Do what you can for him. I gotta have a talk with the rest of the citizens.
Horn stepped out of the blacksmith shop and raised his hands. The crowd looked at him curiously. Horn reached inside his shirt pocket and pulled out a badge. He pinned it to the front of his shirt.
My name is Horn. I'm a special deputy working for Sheriff Bucky O'Neill of Yavapai County and empowered by him to take action for the purpose of quelling the range war that's supposed to be brewing in these parts. Earlier today, gunmen working for Ed Sandine ambushed a party of Lazy F riders and wiped them all out, except for the man I just brought into town.
Horn raised his hands again.
There's a good chance that Sandine is going to attack the Lazy F itself, and I'm calling for volunteers, here and now, to form a posse and ride back out there with me to help defend the place.
How do you know Sandine was responsible for the ambush?
That fella inside, Glover by name, said he saw one of Sandine's hired killers amongst the gunmen. Somebody named Riley.
That'd be Vern Riley. He's one of Sandine's men, all right, and damn sure a killer. But what makes you think Sandine's gonna strike directly at the ranch?
If that's what Frank Morgan thinks, then that's good enough for me, too.
Morgan?
But he works for... Don't say Sandine. You folks got the wrong idea about him. There's nobody around here wants to stop Sandine more than Morgan. And nobody Sandine would like to see dead more than him.
Morgan always did strike me as an honest fella, even when it looked like the evidence was against him. Shoot, I'm the one who hired him as a town marshal before Howard Flynn got killed and all hell broke loose.
Yeah, well, hell's due to get a chunk shoved under the corner if Morgan's right about Sandine riding against the Lazy F. The girl who owns the place, Flynn's niece, doesn't have enough men left out there to fight off a bunch of raiders. That's why I want to take a posse out there. And we don't need to waste any time. Otherwise, there may not be anything left to save.
You said you're a deputy. Can't you get word to Sheriff O'Neill and have him send in more men?
By the time a rider could get to Prescott and Bucky could send a posse back here, the Lazy F might be wiped out. I do intend to send word to the sheriff, but we can't expect to see any reinforcements from him get here in time.
Horn looked around at the citizens of San Remo.
It's up to you, folks. I know some of you have done business with Sandine in the past, and you don't want to get on his bad side. But if you'd seen what I saw out there on the trail between here and the Lazy F, you'd know he's gone kill crazy. If he gets away with grabbing that spread, he'll go after all the other ranches in these parts next. And when he gets his hands on those, he'll turn his attention on the town. I've seen range hogs like that before. If you don't stop him, he won't quit until he controls everything in the Verde Valley all the way to the Muggian Rim.
But such things can't happen. This is a civilized country. We have laws.
Laws are just words, and they don't mean a damned thing unless somebody's willing to stand up and make them stand for something.
Horn rested a hand on the butt of his gun.
I'm going back out to the Lazy F. The rest of you do what you want.
Horn started to push his way through the crowd, but Donahue blocked his path.
Wait just a minute, fella. We didn't say nobody was going with you. We've stood up to Sandine before, and we can do it again. Ain't that right, boys? Just give us a few minutes to get our guns and our horses. Then we'll be back, and we'll all ride out to the Lazy F together.
All right.
Horn looked at the sky.
Just don't take too long about it. It's liable to be night before we can get there, and I've got a hunch Sandine won't wait very long to strike once darkness falls.
As the crowd dispersed, the stocky, fair-haired man at the rear of it walked quickly back to the Verde Saloon. Mitch Kite was a man in turmoil. From the sound of everything Kite had heard, Sandine had reverted all the way back to his hoot owl ways and was ready to now take what he wanted by force. This might be a good time for Kite to take the loot he had stashed in a carpet bag under a loose board in the storeroom of the saloon and light a shunk out of these parts. The law was in on this now, in the person of that special deputy, Horn. Kite had heard of Tom Horn and knew the man was no more honest than he had to be, but like most Westerners, Horn had a code and stuck to it. Right now, he was working on the side of the law, and nothing would sway him from that path. Next month, Horn might sign on with a man every bit as bad as Sandine and would then be loyal to him until the job was done. Tom Horn was the sort of man most folks thought Frank Morgan was. Yet Morgan and Horn had one thing in common. They were both very dangerous men. And now that they were working on the same side, perhaps Sandine wasn't fully aware of what he was getting into by taking them on. Somebody ought to warn him, Kite thought. And he considered saddling up a horse and riding for Saber as hard as he could, in hopes that he could get there before Sandine gathered up his army of gunslingers and rode on to the Lazy F. In the future, Sandine might be very appreciative of somebody who brought him a warning like that. So, that was the dilemma facing Kite. Cut and run, taking what he could, or keep betting on a Sandine victory and play the game out to the end? With a grim smile, Kite made up his mind. He was going somewhere, all right, and he hoped it wasn't straight to hell.